I don't know about you, but we're always looking for ways to get our kids involved and give back in our local community. That's why we're excited to tell you about Student Visionaries of the Year, a campaign by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, which is the largest nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a world without blood cancers. Student Visionaries of the Year is a 7-week philanthropic leadership development program for high school students. Participants form strong teams and fundraise in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor in their local community. I would love for Violet to do this program when she's in high school.
This program is transformative. It not only helps students develop valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship, not to mention it looks great on college applications, but most importantly, it's also a chance for them to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on blood cancer patients and their families. You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students.
Okay, Liz, I have big news.
What is it?
My Clawfoss door was installed.
Oh my God, finally.
I know.
Do you like it?
I love it. It looks so good.
Oh good. Worth the wait.
And I have privacy.
Hi, and welcome to Happier in Hollywood, the podcast about how to be happier, healthier, saner, more creative, more successful, and more productive in a backbiting, superficial, chaotic, unpredictable, fundamentally insane world. I'm Liz Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA, and with me is my high school friend and writing partner, Sarah.
That's me, Sarah Fain. On this podcast, we talk about being writers in Hollywood, how we balance a career and friendship, and how to survive the war of attrition that is life in Los Angeles.
Today, we're going to talk to the good doctor, co-showrunner Liz Friedman, about the challenges of wrapping up a long-running, much-loved show.
Then, in Take a Hike, we're exploring friendship, and this week's Hollywood hack will keep your world sparkling clean.
But first, Sarah, we have an update. We wanted to mention to everyone that friend of the pod, Leanne Dolan, who's also a satellite sister, has a new novel out. It is called The Marriage Sabbatical, and we are loving it.
Yes, yeah, so we talked to Leanne in episode 270 about how to write a novel, and she was incredibly helpful. And her book, oh, Liz, I love it so much. It's obviously about marriage. I'm not married, but still, I thought it was really fascinating and emotional and, you know, wonderful. But the other thing I loved about it is, you know, we like female friendship books. We're very into female yes. friendship, obviously. But there was a really moving male friendship story as part of the book. And I just, like, I loved it so much.
Yes. Love the idea that men can have a relationship like that.
Yes. And it was just so well drawn. I thought it was very smart and wonderful.
Yes. Smart and entertaining. So everybody read The Marriage Sabbatical.
Okay, Liz, it's time for From the Treadmill Desks Of, in which we discuss what's most pressing in our work psyches. This week, it's the ins and outs of ending a long-running hit TV show, and we have the amazing writer Liz Friedman with us to discuss.
Liz Friedman arrived in Los Angeles from Wesleyan University with almost zero connections and exactly one prize-winning sociology thesis entitled Final Girls and Neighborhood Nightmares, a Feminist and Class-Based Analysis of Slasher Films. I absolutely love that title. The thesis got her an unpaid internship at Sam Raimi's Renaissance Pictures, which led to a position as Raimi's assistant and later to a job as an executive. She transitioned to writing, which led to 7 seasons writing and producing Fox's hit show House before going on to develop and co-write the pilot for Netflix's foundational series Orange is the New Black. The script was nominated for Writers Guild and Emmy Awards. She joined ABC's The Good Doctor in the 2nd season, serving as executive producer before stepping up to co-showrunner. Liz lives in Los Angeles with her wife, their 2 sons, and 2 dogs. Liz, welcome to Happier in Hollywood.
Welcome.
Hi, you guys. It's so great to see you. Feels like it's been forever.
I know. We didn't cross paths on the strike line.
No, no, we didn't. We must have been working on opposite sides of town.
Yes. Yes.
Well, it's very exciting to see you. And congratulations on The Good Doctor. It's so huge. What an accomplishment to be entering the final season of such a great and successful show. And so we wanted to talk to you about that. Like, how do you approach a final season? And did you know before you started writing that you were heading to a series finale?
No, we did not. We came back from the strike knowing that it was possible that it would be the last season. And at first we thought, you know, we had the ability to do 15 episodes, which then became 13 episodes. And then about a couple months in, that became 10 episodes. And we had started breaking episode 7 when they let us know that this would be the last season. I had already been thinking about a season ender that had the ability to, my plan was I desperately wanted to leave an option open because this is such a great job and a great show. So my thought was I had an idea for a story that I could do a couple of modular scenes in that I would either have in or not have in, depending on if it was a series finale, because I wanted to be able for us to have the option for as long as possible. But then we were just, I think I had my first outline on 707 when they said, this is going to be the final season.
And did you alter then what you were doing? Like, did you have to rewrite or did everything kind of fit in because of where you had been thinking you were going?
We definitely had to re-break, and there was a story that was going to continue on for one episode longer that we said, okay, that's got to wrap up here. But then we were lucky in that we had the elements that we were working with all sort of lent themselves relatively easily to a series finale. So, you know, we had to spend a day lying on the floor, drinking whiskey and weeping. And intermittently, I would get up and go, okay, so this one's going to start here. And then, so this is going to be this episode. And then we'd lie down and drink a little more. But yeah, so we figured that out.
Yeah, we have all been there. Now, Freddie Highmore plays Dr. Sean Murphy. He's such a beloved character.
Amazing.
Does that add extra pressure for you on ending the show, giving him, you know, the ending that you think he deserves?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, pretty much everything about this show and this job added to me feeling a lot of pressure about how to do the finale. You know, it's been such a great show and a great character, and it's a great family of people to work with. And it's also, I was working and I knew that we always knew that David was sure was going to direct the last episode of the season because we knew there was a possibility that it would be the series finale. When it was clear that it was going to be the series finale, I said, okay, so let's write it. And then I actually pulled in my number two, Jessica Graysoll, to write it with us. So, you know, and so then at that point, I'm writing a series finale with the guy who gave me my staff writer job. So, you know, my first staff writer job. So that felt a lot of pressure. And I do think the show has been great and also, I hope, important. And really, to some extent, I think the pressure started to vapor lock me a little bit. And a very seasoned showrunner friend of mine said, look, forget about that. What are they going to do? Fire you? and she said, just do the thing you want to do, which was a really, I think, exactly what I needed to hear. And then we came up with a story that I'm super happy with.
And how much do you take into account what you think the audience wants to see? Like, are you thinking of it only from your point of view as a writer, or do you also look at the outside?
Often when I write, I'm thinking about the audience as well. And as somebody who, you know, has watched a lot of TV, loves TV, has watched a lot of series finales, has seen ones that I thought were great and ones that I didn't think were great, I was definitely you know, thinking about it. And I do think there's some choices that we made in the finale that very much, and how we set up the story, that really kept the focus on our people. And I'm really pleased about that. It's, you know, you do a medical show and you have patients of the week and they're characters in their own right and you want to make them real, but you use them to tell stories with your series regulars and your leads. So, you know, the question was how to do that in a finale and not end up having people who it's going to be very hard to get people to care about.
Absolutely. Now, Liz, you have been at The Good Doctor since season 2. It is season 7. You've alluded to this a couple of times already that, you know, shows are like families.
Yeah.
You really are with these people a lot. You are working with them. You're in the trenches. So we're curious, on a personal level, how are you dealing with the end of the show and that sort of coming to this abrupt halt?
Terribly.
That's honest.
It's awful. Yeah, I'm not big on sugarcoating things. You know, I mean, it's been incredibly emotional. It was, you know, getting the finale written and making it to the end of the season was really quite a sprint. And then I did get to go up to Vancouver when we shot it. And, you know, it was incredibly emotional, and wrapping the actors and clapping people out and saying goodbye to the crew. Mm. I mean, I was so glad to know, to have a chance to tell everybody how much I appreciated them. It was really the best crew I've ever worked with. And then to think back about the fact that we had made it through a pandemic and a strike, and that, you know, the chances that I will ever have a job that runs for 7 years again are so small. You know,
things have changed.
Yeah. And, you know, now it's going out there and trying to figure out what my next thing is so that I can hide from feelings of loss by working.
Yes. I want to just say, as a side note, clapping people out, because that is such a thing, is when at the end of the series, well, often at the end of an episode, but it's a much bigger deal, at the end of a series, the AD will announce, that's a series wrap for, you know, Jane Doe, and everybody claps. And as each person finishes shooting their scenes, and it can be, I mean, you can just sob when you're clapping someone out because it feels so momentous and often, you know, sad, obviously, if it's the end.
Yeah.
But exciting too, but sad.
Yeah, it was really, and I wouldn't want to repeat any of the specifics, but Freddie Highmore specifically asked that his final speech to the crew not be recorded. And it was such an amazing thing because, you know, nowadays for that, everybody has their phones up and on. And the second he said it, everyone just put it down right away. And it was such an amazing demonstration. And he said, I just want us to, let's just have this moment. And like, it was just such a profound and amazing show of like, you know, that's who Freddie Highmore is that out of pure adoration and respect, 250 people or sort of say, whatever you want, Fred, whatever.
Oh, I'm that's getting emotional.
I know.
I am too, hearing this story.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, it's, you know, and I'm trying to be excited about the next thing, but I mean, it was, I could have written for Sean forever. You know, there was a little bit of a moment where I think ABC sort of wanted us to present it as if it was our decision and, as if I run out of ideas. No, I'm not going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, I live with these people. Yeah. I care about these people. We could keep hanging out.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah.
And in a way, just going back to what you were asking about, like thinking about the audience, I don't want to give anything away, but just I wanted them to have a sense of that things go on. You know, to me, that universe is still there, right? It's still going.
Yes. Yes.
Even if we don't get to see what would have been really entertaining stories.
Yes. So, Liz, we're wondering, because we have a lot of listeners who want to be television writers or are television writers. As a showrunner, what do you look for when you're hiring a staff? At the beginning of a show or during the show, to go away from the finale for a moment.
First of all, I want you to be able to write well.
Yes.
It seems a bit obvious, but sometimes it's harder to find than you want it to be.
Yes.
And I really miss when people used to do spec scripts.
Yeah, agree.
So we recently did an episode about being on set as a writer. Do you have any advice for writers when they go to set?
I listened to that, and I thought it was really great. I had a couple of things that are a little bit sort of like a little bit step up from that. One of them is I like to start the day by going to the AD and finding out what the timeline for the day is, meaning how long do they have budgeted to shoot each scene. Now, as an upper-level writer, you might sometimes lean on your director to stay on that timeline. I would certainly not suggest a lower level writer do that, but it will give you a sense of if all of a sudden why everybody's having a heart attack, that's why they're having a heart attack, right? I mean, basically being a half an hour down, that happens all the time. That's not a big deal. At around about an hour down, people are going to start to sweat it. So if you have like what is basically a finesse performance note when you're an hour down, don't give it. You know, your director's going to want to kill you.
Excellent advice.
And then this is a trickier one that when I started being on set first as a non-writing producer and then as a writer, you know, I've never even gone to film school. And so I've made some tremendously stupid mistakes. And something that it's worth remembering is don't give performance notes on the actor who is not on camera, right?
Yeah.
Or don't give like a detailed, you're like, oh, I thought she would cry harder. Like if you're in the master shot, don't give that note. You're not going to get that there. You guys may have said that. But, you know, but also if somebody off camera gets the line wrong, that doesn't matter. Because you're not going to use that. And I say that, I'm sure for many people in this audience, that's so obvious. But I remember once upon a time when that was not obvious to me. And I did that. And somebody had to get the look when someone's like, we're not on them.
Someone will appreciate that advice very, very much in the future. Yes. That is a really, really good point. And yes, I'm sure we made that mistake.
Yes, no doubt this week someone will not do that because they heard this.
Right? Yeah. Yes. No, and just, you know, oh, I don't really think they don't seem very upset. You go, well, they're not on camera. So no, they're not upset. But yeah.
Liz, when does the finale of The Good Doctor air? We're very excited to see it and sad.
May 21st on ABC. So, and thereafter forever on Hulu.
Okay, yeah. May 21st on ABC.
Bring your Kleenex.
The Good Doctor has made me cry many times, literally starting in the pilot. So, yes, we'll be prepared.
Yeah. That is a great pilot.
Liz, thank you so much for joining us. We cannot wait to watch the finale.
Thank you guys, and I want to know what you think. So, let me know.
Okay. It's just so nice to see you.
It was so great to see you guys too.
Coming up, Liz, we're going to talk about friendship, but first, this break. Liz, there is nothing I love more than having a delicious meal that I didn't have to cook, which is why I have been getting no prep, no mess meals from Factor. Meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. Last night, I had blackened salmon with broccoli and with cauliflower rice. It was so delicious. It was the perfect dinner.
Head to factormeals.com/HIH50 and use code HIH50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code HIH50 at factormeals.com/HIH50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
Okay, Liz, here's some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, multiple systems, delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs, you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and you improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors.
Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hollywood. 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 Okay, Sarah, it is time for Take a Hike, in which we discuss mental, physical, spiritual health. Today's is definitely about mental health, probably all three. And it's more of a discussion. Sometimes we have a recommendation. Today we have a discussion, which is about the essential qualities in friendship.
Yes. And Liz, explain where this came from.
Okay. So Sarah, you and I are writing a lot about friendship. But as you mentioned, central to our novel that we're working on is female friendship and the nature of it. And so you and I were talking about that. And I was reminded of a question that our friend Bill asked me years ago about Adam. So he said, when you wanted to marry Adam, what is the essential thing? What is the one essential thing about Adam? Like his wife was that she was independent. He didn't want someone who was too clingy and dependent on him. He has the most wonderful wife, by the way. And I said, and it was funny because I kind of knew the answer as soon as he asked, and I thought about it. For Adam was his integrity. That's just very important to me. That's his one essential quality. So then you and I were saying, well, does friendship have this essential quality? And that led to such an interesting discussion.
Yes. And we started talking about what are our essential qualities in the other person, which was kind of a surprising revelation, I think, for both of us. It was kind of like, oh, really? In a positive way.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting to think about that.
Well, I sort of think this is a case where there's no bad answer. It's just right. Interesting. So I said to you, so the essential quality in you for me is really your intellect. Like if I strip away everything else, it's like Sarah's intellect is what I'm so drawn to and have been from our first conversation.
Which I have to say, I'm so incredibly flattered by. I was like, my intellect, just like I'm floating on the clouds. That's so wonderful. And then my essential quality for you, which I still don't quite have the right word for, but was relentlessness. Just your ability to just keep going with determination, but also, like, you're just essential, like, not giving upness, I think, is so just who you are. And obviously, I think, is a very excellent quality.
Well, what's funny about that, Sarah, is I would not ever describe myself as someone who doesn't give up. So,
but look at you. I mean, like, think of the friendships that you've had since you were in grade school and this insane job that we have chosen to do. And, you know, I mean, I think it's such a huge part of who you are.
Well, I love that. I mean, like we said, I was also like, oh my gosh, I'm relentless. I asked Adam and Jack, I said, Sarah thinks I'm relentless, you know, in a good way. Do you agree with that? And They did. I think more because of my relentless nagging than anything else. But nonetheless, I'm happy to see myself that way because also it makes me want to embody it. It makes me want to keep going, keep just being the engine that could.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like you said, it's not a good or bad thing. It's really just like an enlightening thing. And in our case, it happens to be good. Thank goodness. That's, I guess, why we've been doing this for so long. But it's also like different for different people. Like Adam, when asked about your essential quality, probably wouldn't say relentless. He would say something different. And like your friend Mindy in Kansas City, she's known you since you were a small child. Her essential quality of you is probably different than mine and Adam's.
Yes. Well, and we also get different things from different people. So it wouldn't make sense for every person in your life to have the same essential quality. One person could be their humor or their loyalty or the fact that they're not judgmental, could be anything. But it's just kind of interesting to look into what it is. And what I also think is interesting is that it's not the same for each other. So it's not as if yours is intellect, right. Mine is intellect. It's interesting to me how they come together.
Yeah, it really is. So this is something now we want to challenge our listeners to think about, like, what are the essential qualities of your friends and ask them what their essential quality for you is. It's enlightening.
Yes. And we also, Sarah, we now want to apply this to the characters in our novel, because as we said, this whole conversation started because we're really thinking about female friendship. And if we know for each of the characters what this essential quality is in the others, it gives us kind of this defining place to write from.
Yeah. And it helps us, so much of the book is kind of interior thoughts and how they feel about each other. There are three main female characters who are friends, and it's kind of a spider web because each person's essential quality for the other is going to be different.
Yes.
So it's just, I think we haven't done it yet, but we're going to sit down with Dabble Writer and have a deep discussion about what they see in each other as that essential quality.
Yes. So much fun. Let us know the essential qualities in the people around you. It's fascinating to hear about. Send us a voice memo or write us an email at happierinhollywood@gmail.com. Coming up, we are going to talk about a cleaning hack that Sarah has discovered that I did not know existed. But first, this break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Liz, this week's Hollywood hack is the Mr. Clean Magic Eraser. I am obsessed with this thing. They clean everything.
So explain it. Is it like a block, like a eraser block?
It's more, I would say, like a sponge, but it's like white and it foams up. I used it to clean my suitcases because they were looking really battered and dingy, and their one is pink, one is green. So it's like I cleaned them off. They looked so much better, but like they clean the sink. They clean. Violet has a tendency to dye her hair blue in her bathroom and not clean it up. But they get the blue off her bathroom counter and out of the shower, and or if she'll do some crazy dyeing something on the countertop in front of the TV in the TV room, which she does like 15 times a week. It cleans off whatever purple thing she's doing. They really are amazing. Like if your kid draws on the wall, get a Mr. Clean Magic Eraser.
So question, Sarah, can you reuse this or is it like a one-time thing?
No, you can reuse it. You get packets of them like you get packets of sponges, and you can reuse them quite a bit.
Oh, that's amazing. And not expensive.
Not expensive at all. Like for $5, you can get several.
All right. Mr. Clean Magic Eraser. I didn't know it existed, but now I need to get some. Okay, Sarah, you this week have a recommendation. Every week, one of us recommends something we love, podcast, movie, TV show, book, whatever we want. And this week, you're recommending an episode of a TV show.
I am. I am recommending the last episode of season 3 of Bluey, which it turns out isn't actually the last episode, but it was considered to be, and then they've surprised us with another one. But but this episode, it's the only long episode of Bluey. It's like 28 minutes long. Violet and I watched it together. It's a kids show. I acknowledge that, but we watch it. Violet started watching it just like as a chill thing before bed sometimes, and now I'm completely obsessed with it. And this episode of television had me sobbing. And I don't mean like little tears. I mean like holding back loud sobs. It was just so beautiful and emotional and moving. And best of all, it had my favorite Zen parable in it, Liz.
Oh, what?
The one about the farmer and the horses. You know, his horse runs away and the neighbors say, oh, what bad luck. And he says, you never know what's good news and what's bad news. Although in the Bluey version, it's we'll see. So I obviously extra loved that.
Well, what, Sarah, is the premise of Bluey? Because I have seen so many articles lately about Bluey and how huge it is. Just what is the basic premise?
It's about a family of healers, you know, healer dogs, blue healers, and I think red healers, who live in Australia and are just adorable and cute and loving.
So it's animated.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And where can people watch Bluey?
It's on Disney Plus.
Okay. And is that the last episode of the series or we don't know yet?
It's unclear.
Okay.
They've created a lot of mystery and drama about that. So it's really, I think, at this point, unknown.
All right. Fascinating.
But I hope there's more Bluey coming up.
Okay. Bluey, not just for kids, apparently. And that is it for this episode of Happier in Hollywood. We love hearing from you. Email us or send us a voice memo to happierinhollywood@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and please follow us if you haven't already.
Thanks to our executive producer, Chuck Reed, and thanks to everyone at Sancola Sound. You can follow them on Instagram at Sancola Sound.
Thanks to everyone at Odyssey. And as always, thank you to Gretchen Rubin. Happier in Hollywood is part of the Onward Project.
Listen to the other Onward Project podcasts, Happier with Gretchen Rubin and Side Hustle School.
Get in touch. I'm on Instagram and Threads at Liz Craft, and Sarah is at S Fain. We also have a Facebook group. Search for Happier in Hollywood on Facebook to join the conversation.
Until next week, I'm Sarah Fain.
And I'm Liz Craft. Thanks for joining us. It's a fun job.
And we enjoy it. Yeah, I actually want to get like Bluey swag. Violet has a Bluey sweatshirt, and I'm like, would it be weird if I'm like, you know, as a full-on grown-up, a Bluey sweatshirt?
Go for it, Sarah. Go for it.
From the Onward Project.